I'm the dude. So that's what you call me.
Are you a virgin?
Yeah, not since I was 10.
Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret.
Come out to the coast. We get together, have a few laughs.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is the war room.
Can I return it if it doesn't fit?
It always fits. Eventually.
Welcome back to Movie Mingle. I'm Caveman.
And I'm Maggie.
And today we're on episode 56, and we watched Howl's Moving Castle.
Yeah, we did.
I love Howl's Moving Castle.
I had never seen Howl's Moving Castle.
So we'll find out soon.
Yes.
Enough. How Maggie felt about watching it for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And the situation that we were in literally last night is when we watched it. Actually, I'll just say it.
Yeah, fuck it. I think it's great. And last night when we turned it on, both our kids were just getting home from school.
Yeah.
And we were like, hey. Do you guys want to watch this with us? Kind of thinking that maybe the elder one would.
Because we know that our oldest kid is a big fan of Hayao Miyazaki.
Yes. And, you know, so we kind of assumed they would want to watch it with us. But then when we asked our other kid, they also were like, sure. And so it ended up as an impromptu family night, which was actually really nice and really kind of needed after a couple long weeks of a lot of teenage angst in this home of ours.
Yay, teenagers.
Teenagers. It's a lot.
But it was fun hanging out with our teenagers last night on the couch watching
this great film.
Beautiful, hand-drawn Miyazaki film.
The older one and I both fangirling over Howl. Oh, fuck.
Of course.
God damn. Just so hot. You know, it was a really a great, what a great thing, right? To have sat down to watch essentially a movie for homework.
Yeah.
And then have it turn into a nice family
little
memory.
Family night.
Yeah.
Movie night.
So what a happy thing.
Because usually we watch these movies while they're at school.
Yeah. Or we watch them when they're home and they're both just like, nah. Or we're like, get out.
They're like, not for you. I have homework to do. I'd rather do homework than watch a movie with you.
I'm just going to go sit on the internet and talk to my friends for hours on end, which is what I would have done when my parents watched movies.
Yeah. Especially ones that I wasn't allowed to watch.
Yeah. Like, I'll be on the computer looking at things you probably wouldn't want me looking at.
Yeah. What's worse, a movie that might be questionable
or porn,
or the internet in general, but especially porn.
But especially porn on the internet. Oh, my God. But, this is a really, really sweet little film. I really don't dislike Miyazaki films. I actually like every single one of his films that I've ever seen.
And it was a double negative.
It was a double negative, and I'm sorry. But like my whole point is that I don't dislike him. I just haven't seen a lot of his films no other reason than usually I'm just like,
But you know you're going to be in for a good time.
I know, but I'm not always in the mood.
You know, there are certain movies that you would like to watch this movie at least once every year. One of those movies for me is Groundhog Day.
Yeah, you have to watch
Groundhog Day. I watch Groundhog Day every February 2nd.
Yeah, Groundhog's Day.
It's a tradition of mine.
And
nobody else has to.
With tradition.
Yeah, nobody else has to watch it with me.
Yeah, most years I don't even watch it with you because I'm like,
yeah. And this last year you did.
And it was great.
Fun.
Yeah, it was a ton of fun.
But I don't expect you to be part of the tradition or to do it again next year.
And like also, you know, I will happily rewatch Pride and Prejudice every weekend forever for the rest of my life. Because I love that film so much. But, you know, it's because that there's something about comfort. There's something about being able to put a movie on in the background while you start your phone. There's something about...
This is a comfort movie for our oldest kid.
Yes. And I'm sure it's a comfort movie for many, many people. And
for sure.
Totally get it. This movie is...
And if not this movie, then there's another movie out there that people love from him. Because my favorite Miyazaki film is still Princess Mononoke.
Howl's Moving Castle makes only the third Miyazaki film I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Which is shocking.
It is shocking. We're getting there.
We're getting
and
there.
And even though there is one more Miyazaki film on the list.
Yeah. I would love to watch My Neighbor Totoro. The one with the pigs in space
It's Michael Keaton as a pig and he's a flying ace.
Yeah, sure. I would be down for that one random morning, you know, but Howl's Moving Castle is the third film of his that I've seen. I would still say Princess Mononoke is my favorite, although this one might like with even one more repeated viewing might take it. I have seen Princess Mononoke.
This movie is beautiful.
Beautiful. Absolutely. Yes. I love, one of the things I loved most about Spirited Away was the sort of watercolor animation, like the background scenes and everything. That movie looked like it was made
a mixture of like, there was some watercolor in there, some acrylic kind of paintings.
Yeah. This one is like all acrylic alpine landscape. And like, personally, alpine landscape might be my favorite of all time.
Alpine landscape is a beautiful.
It's fucking beautiful. Like, I, you know, I've been lucky enough to spend some time in Switzerland, and you're just like, this country can't fucking look like this. How is it this fucking pretty? Like, the mountains, the deep greens, those blue lakes, like, just, I love an alpine visage. This movie is just rich with that warm acrylic alpine, and I could not take my eyes off of it, and watching it on our big fucking TV was just gorgeous. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, like every shot was a literal painting.
A literal painting.
On video.
Yeah. And I, like, I could not take my eyes off of it. It was just incredible.
I think another one that you would probably like that will probably be the next movie you watch outside of the podcast. Because, like I said, we do have one more Miyazaki film towards the end of the list.
Of the run, yeah.
And outside of that last one, I would say Castle in the Sky is another one that I think you would like. Everything else after that that he did is a little more towards younger audiences, I feel.
That's fine.
As far as director,
we watched Beauty and the Beast the other day. Like
Beauty and the Beast is, I'm talking even
just,
more. Yeah,
Beauty and the Beast is a movie for all people, not just children.
I was going to say, like My Neighbor Totoro is definitely more for, like, it's a very fun kids movie.
And that's,
and there's nothing wrong with it because I love kids movies. I grew up on them. Nausicaa.
I love kids movies since I was a kid.
Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind is another beautiful one.
I don't ever want to watch Grave of the Fireflies.
No, and he didn't direct that one. That was,
but that's still a Studio Ghibli
film.
It
is still
a
Studio Ghibli film. He may have had something else to do with it other than directing, but Grave of the Fireflies is sad, and I own it. But Castle in the Sky.
Well, we'll get to it.
Future movie.
One night we'll have nothing else to do, and we'll be like, fuck, let's just put it on.
Howl's Moving Castle was written by Diana Wynne Jones, who was a children's fantasy novel writer. She wrote Howl's Moving Castle in 1986. This is not a...
no, it's not. Original. Yeah. No, I knew that.
Story. This is based off of a fantasy novel from the 80s.
Mm-hmm. Which, the novel itself kind of sounds, what the research I've been doing over the last little bit, the novel itself sounds pretty entertaining. Whether or not I ever read it, I don't know. But, it, you know, it sounds like a fairly entertaining film. I think that the movie kind of streamlines the the story a lot. Apparently it cuts out a lot of extra characters. There's a lot more to it. And so, you know, the movie itself is kind of a more streamlined version. It is a solidly pacifist film. It is anti-war. It is feminist. It is, you know, pro-nature, as of course all of his films are.
Yeah. Nature, you know, over industry.
Yeah, and industry and war will, you know, bring ruin into us all. Yeah.
That is pretty much his mission. That is the statement from...
Supposedly,
every one of his movies.
He wrote this movie in response to the kind of beginning, or, you know, the oncoming Iraq war. He was really angry at America for it, and so he wanted to write something that we would find uncomfortable. Whether or not we have, I don't know if it worked like that the way he maybe hoped it would. Well, but
I'm thinking the people who know Miyazaki and his work, it's not going to reach audiences that are causing the issues.
Well, no,
but it's about reaching audiences who can maybe, you know, later on, even if it's down to the person who votes, you know, sometimes growing up, especially, your character is built on a lot of stuff that you were grew up on, whether it was
religion, music,
or
pop culture,
the arts.
Yeah.
And sometimes, you know, you think, you see something, you read something, and it can have a big impact on choices you make. Mm-hmm. And so you never know how you influence people. These kind of stories are the kind of person that I want my child to grow up to be.
And that's beautiful. And that's the power of art. You've often said on this podcast behind the scenes that you don't want me getting political. But art can be political.
And some of these movies, like this one, is very political.
And also sometimes art can have something to say about a political thing going on that it is not associated to. But you find solace or guidance or a good old fuck you attitude because of art, right? Like, art can be decisive. Art can be political. Art can be, you know, all these things. Popcorn movies usually aren't, but Captain America is not exactly pro-America.
Not necessarily, no.
You know, it's not the way that, like, Team America is. But although Team America is a giant joke, and I get it, but the establishment inside of Team America is far more politically leaning and alt-right and America than Captain America. It's not all stars and stripes and blind patriotism with Cap. This movie, Howl's Moving Castle itself, is a political takedown of war, of fascism, of, you know, all this dumb shit that we're stuck in the middle of still. And yeah, we want people to get the right message, but I don't always think that that message is going to get through to the people that aren't going to see it. And if they're not going to see it when they're slapped across the face with it, they're not going to see it in the beautiful subtext of this film. You know, they're not going to,
right.
They're not going to find the message that our child found and that I found in this movie when all they see is just pretty pictures and fun story.
You're not going to get to every
person, but at least you can get to one.
But this particular man has gotten to people.
Which is great. And I'm really glad.
And it's not just because of this movie. It's because of his whole career. He's made a career out of it. The more people like him that there are, the more people that you reach. You just have to find that niche thing.
Yeah.
You know, this guy has got a niche fan following. He can reach them.
Yeah.
This person has these people. This person has these people. Yeah. So, you know, it's just like, how big is the Kevin Smith fan base?
Yeah.
He's got a niche fan base.
Yes, he does.
That like his films, that he's been able to reach with his films, and has told stories using that. And, you know, other than smoking weed and dancing to metal.
And stink palming people.
You know, there's some other great messages in his movies.
Say, would you like a chocolate-covered pretzel?
And some of them are just dick and fart jokes.
Yeah.
And
sometimes there's a really good message hidden in the dick and fart jokes. I will die on the hill that Jay and Silent Bob Reboot is actually a very wholesome and sweet film about what it means to be a parent, even if it is from the visage of, like, fucking Jay.
Stoners, yeah.
Yeah, of Jason Mewes.
Dumb stoners.
And Kevin Smith. Like, but it's a very sweet, wholesome film. Obviously, you gravitate to the... You tend to like the same thing is that your creators like.
Music was from Joe Hisaishi. He has over 130 projects since the 70s, including Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, and The Boy and the Heron.
He toured through our area not too long ago, and I know a person that dropped
music for
like $350 for a ticket, a single ticket.
Was it all his music, or was it for a specific movie?
All of his music that he himself was conducting, so he was there. And it was at, like, the, you know, it was one of the big halls in town, like one of the big proper. Yeah,
they do that a lot now where they play, where a conductor or a composer will come through and conduct their own music.
There's a Lord of the Rings thing coming through town soon. Ooh, that's all the music and whatnot. But as far as I can tell, it's actually nobody big, right? It's not Howard Shore. It's not Enya. It's all just...
It's just the music.
The music, and then any, you know, singers and other musicians and soloists they could find. Which, on the one hand, would be beautiful to go watch that music, because that music is stunning.
It is.
But on the other hand, I want to watch Enya. I don't want to watch some...
Just some composer that you've never heard of?
Some composer that I've never heard of perform a song... I guess a conductor I've never heard of perform a song that I love by a, you know, C-grade version of Enya that they found at a community college somewhere.
Oof.
Which sounds shadier than I meant it, actually.
It is shady.
That was pretty shady of me. But, you know, it's not Billy Boyd out there touring. If it was, I would have been like, fuck yeah, let's go see Billy Boyd.
Cinematography was done by Atsushi Okui, who has also worked on many projects, including the cinematography for Princess Mononoke, Spirited Away, and Boy and the Heron.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I mean, it's not like this movie's, you know, like this is usually, it's all the same group of people.
It is. I mean, that's the Studio Ghibli people. He was also the animation camera operator for Akira, which I thought was cool.
It's cool.
Another great anime.
Which I know nothing about other than the image of him walking to the car. Literally nothing. I know nothing about Akira.
Anyway.
That doesn't help.
If people who... Well, I don't think you'd like it. Rotten Tomatoes has Howl's Moving Castle at an 88% from critics. And a 93% from audiences. Yeah, I know. Audiences loved it.
Oh, yeah. How of course. Fucking not?
But like, 88% from critics.
I actually don't even think I've ever heard anybody be like, I don't really like that film. Like, I've never heard anybody say anything bad about this movie.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, it's got an 8.2 on IMDb.
I mean, I guess, like, a solid B is pretty impressive, but this movie is so fucking pretty. I guess, to be fair, the plot is a little light. I mean, it's not that it's light, but it's a little, like, you know, a lot of things are kind of very easily just sort of...
Yeah, it's not
like
as
finished up. You know,
it's not as complicated as like Princess Mononoke.
It's not as deep as Princess
Mononoke. Maybe it might be in par with like Spirit Away, with just like a very simple plot.
Yeah,
like not a lot of
just, this kid is cursed and needs to get home.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah. Very okay. Wow. This movie's very much like Spirit Away.
But you know, Spirited Away, the kid actually does go home with her parents, her awful parents. You know, to live her life. And in this movie, Sophie gets to run off with a straight-up hottie twink, living their lives and fucking away in that awesome castle. So, like, it's a little more adventurous, but, you know, home for her was Howl,
see,
not
this is why I think
home.
You're going to like Castle in the Sky. It was made for $24 million. It made $9 million here in America. I feel like the American fan base is pretty much like that, $9 million.
Yeah.
We tried, guys. Like, yeah. We came out in full force and...
And this is what we can
this
do.
This is what we can do.
But
he's not popular. He's not as, like, around the world.
Yeah.
The man
especially
is
in 2003.
Well-known.
I
not
feel
just Japan.
Like now a lot more people have caught on to his stuff.
Sure.
Because they've been introduced by their kids, by their friends, whatever.
Even the Boy and the Heron was like a big one. I mean, he came out of retirement to do The Boy and the Heron.
But I'm just saying that, like, in 2003, I don't know, I did not know as many people who knew who he was as I know now, you know, all these years later, 20 odd years later. Like, back then, it was my one friend, Angie, because she was the anime kid, right? And so she would tell us about it, and she would show us. I mean, she was the one that sent me down and showed me Princess Mononoke. You know, it was a very much more niched group of people back in the early 2000s than it is now. Now it's all over Hot Topic. It's all over fucking Funko Pops. It's all over pop culture. I mean, I saw Calcifer before I've ever even seen this movie. I saw a woman. I watched like 18 different videos of a woman on TikTok making a stained glass Calcifer that she was going to put in front of her own fireplace.
That's cool.
You know, it was very pretty. It's bigger now than it was then in terms of its establishment on pop culture.
Sure. Well, it may have only made $9 million here in America, but around the world, it made $233 million.
Yeah. It didn't need America.
No, it didn't. No. So that is a total for $242 million.
Yeah, and that's fucking great.
It won.
I mean, didn't The Social Network make about that?
About that?
Yeah.
But it cost twice as much, I think.
Social Network did?
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, well, even
or it
better.
Was, I can't remember. Social Network was, oh, yeah, it's over here. Yeah. I can just do
it's
that.
It's like 40 million or
40,
something.
Yeah. So 40 versus 24. So, yeah, almost double.
Yeah.
Also, I don't have the Howl's Moving Castle home media numbers, but I bet it's high. I mean, I have it on Blu-ray. That's how we watched it.
It is true through the Disney Corporation, which was quite interesting.
Yeah, back then there was a certain number of years where Disney had distribution rights.
According to Wikipedia,
Studio Ghibli in America.
Howl's Moving Castle made about $18 million from Blu-ray and DVD sales as of April 2022.
It won 14 awards, nominated for an Oscar, which is why it's on our animation list.
Who did it lose to?
It lost to Wallace and Gromit in The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Huh.
Which I never saw Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
I think I saw it once. I think it was cute. Who was it up against?
The third, because there were only three nominees. The third one was Tim Burton's Corpse Bride.
Oh, boy. And Corpse Bride was beautiful.
Corpse Bride was beautiful, but I feel...
But not like Howl's Moving Castle.
Howl's and... I mean, I can only imagine that Wallace... It's Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah, it's going to be cute and funny as fuck, but... this might have been the better movie.
And I'm really curious this year if Wallace and Gromit can do that again. Because they have been nominated for Best Animated Feature.
Offhand, I don't even know it's nominated for Animated Feature this year. Oh, yeah. No, The Wild Robot.
Yes, that's another one.
The cat one.
Flo.
Flo.
Yep.
Wallace and Gromit. And I don't. What are the other two?
Inside Out 2.
Oh, yeah. Okay, of course. Yeah.
And then Memoir of a Snail.
Oh, that looks really fucking cute, though.
Yeah.
And, like, it's Memoir of a Snail's not going to get it, but of those five movies, that's actually the one I would want to watch first.
I haven't seen a single one of the animated films this year.
We've been wanting to watch The Wild Robot, and we just haven't.
Yeah, it's available. Flow is available to watch streaming Inside Out, of course, if you're on Disney Plus. But I think it would be hilarious if Wallace and Gromit...
came back and
people love those movies. I mean,
fucking love Wallace and Gromit.
I didn't see Curse of the Were-Rabbit, and I didn't see Vengeance Most Foul, of course, but I've seen.
Well, why not?
I've seen. I know.
We love Artem films.
I don't. I know. I've seen at least three other Wallace and Gromit movies. I think plus Chicken Run, and their Star Wars special that they did.
Arthur's Christmas.
Arthur Christmas, of course. Yeah.
Oh, God, that one with David Tennant, The Pirates. That was a really fun one.
Oh, yeah, The Pirates.
As was the caveman who played soccer, was also super fucking cute. Artem, it's not a surprise.
No, I'm not saying they didn't deserve it. Yeah. But, man, Howl's Moving Castle is a beautiful film.
It's a beautiful fucking movie, yeah.
So, usually when I watch anime, I have no problem watching it in the language it was... made in, which is usually Japanese, but I'm talking about to any foreign film. I don't mind listening to it in the whatever language it was made in. Mm-hmm. Subtitles, I'm fine with subtitles. The thing with Miyazaki films, I just love the cast that they choose.
It's always a really good cast doing a really good job at the emotion and the inflection.
I've watched the Japanese audio for Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
Every single other Studio Ghibli film, I've only listened to the English versions. The dub.
Oh. I mean, I've only ever listened to the dub, but they're so good.
They do a good job. Yeah. The cast choices are always fun.
It helps that most Miyazaki characters are yelling a lot, so their mouths are just open and just kind of moving. So it...
Sure.
You know, it's pretty easy to dub any sort of noise to that, if you think about it. The animation style lends very nicely to an English dub.
Yeah. It's harder in other movies where...
Live action especially.
Especially, obviously, because...
you can see their mouths
obviously, you can see their mouths move. But even some more detailed animation now, they're starting to really... Like lip movement is starting to, of course, a lot of times they're doing facial captures on the actors. So, of course, the lip movement's going to be accurate. Yeah. But that being said, I do want to listen to more of them in there with the subtitles because I would like to know on some of these other movies what the Japanese cast is like.
Because
the Japanese cast for Princess Mononoke is great.
Yeah, I bet. I'm sure.
But I do love all the English actors who play the characters from Princess Mononoke.
Anderson.
Mm. But the English-speaking actors, some of them are English as far as origin. But for the English-speaking actors in this movie, we have Gene Simmons, but not the Gene Simmons you're thinking of. No, not that one. I'm talking about Jean Simmons, actress, 1929, born in 1929, died in 2010. But
I feel like I should know her, but I couldn't find anything from her IMDb that I really recognize.
I mean, Guys and Dolls and Spartacus.
Yeah, no, I've seen Spartacus. I've never seen Guys and Dolls.
Those are pretty popular, and I'm sure
How to Make an American Quilt was really popular.
I wouldn't be surprised if she did some stage stuff too.
I mean, back then, she might just be one of those names that I recognize, but maybe I just recognize Gene Simmons because of Gene Simmons. Yeah, maybe that's why my brain's like, we know that name.
Wouldn't it be amazing if Gene Simmons was in a Studio Ghibli film though?
No.
Oh. All right, well, nobody wants to have fun like I do.
No.
Christian Bale was in this movie.
Fucking goddamn it, no wonder Howl's so hot. If you
couldn't pick out his voice.
Ugh, so hot. Christian Bale, of course, we've already watched him in American Psycho and The Dark Knight for the list, of course.
Yes.
His favorite movie of mine will always be The Prestige, because that's just such a great fucking film.
Prestige is a great film.
It's great. I mean, like, yeah, you know, the Batman movies are great. And
we'll always love him for Batman.
Ford versus Ferrari was, like, the most dad movie I've ever watched, but it was fun. You know, he's great in everything he does. I mean, Reign of Fire, he was even wildly entertaining in a crazy way. But fucking The Prestige will always be just so good. You know, he was in a movie with Oscar Isaac called The Promise that came out in 2016 about the Armenian genocide. And I've never watched it, but I've always wanted to, but it doesn't stream a lot. Oh, it's on Tubi for free.
He was in Equilibrium with Taye Diggs and Sean Bean.
It's not a bad movie.
It's not a bad movie, and it was one of those movies that came out, it came out 3 years after The Matrix, and you can tell it was trying to be a Matrix movie.
Yeah.
Reign of Fire, we've always talked about.
Fucking Reign of Fire, crazy movie. Stupid.
Of course,
but he's so grounded in it.
Of course, American Psycho. But I really like him a lot in some of his even older stuff when he was much younger.
Yeah,
like Newsies and Swing Kids, we had talked about when we did.
What were we just watching that we saw like a young
Dark Knight episode?
Like, I feel like we were watching something where we saw a young Christian Bale, and we were like, what?
Well, if you figure it out, let me write an email.
No, I won't.
I don't know if I have a, you know what, if I were to go with favorite.
Yeah, there has to be a favorite. There always has to be a favorite.
I mean, I really love him in Dark Knight.
Yeah.
And I really like him in The Prestige. I mean, I think he works best with Nolan. But he's also done some great stuff on his, away from Nolan, like The Fighter.
Yeah. He was good in American Psycho in that. He was horrifying. And
he was absolutely horrifying. I mean, that is probably one of his well-known films for his acting and this crazy character that he had to play. So, yeah, American Psycho is right up there with some of his best work.
Even though I didn't like the film, but he was good.
Blythe Danner.
I will always love Blythe Danner. She is, of course, the mother of Gwyneth Paltrow. She's been in 800,000 things. But I will always love her most for Tu Wong Fu, thanks to everything Julie Newmar.
She's great in that. Yeah. She's great in Meet the Parents and Meet the Fockers.
Yeah. She's just so pretty, and she's so good in things. And I'm always just really happy to be like, oh, there's Blythe Danner. We're like, yay.
Another actress from a time long ago, Lauren Bacall, who plays the Witch of the Wasteland.
Oh, Lauren Bacall. So beautiful. Yeah, she was really big back in like the 40s and 50s. She's done just hundreds of things. Really beautiful woman back then. Incredible actress. Kind of most famous for like Humphrey Bogart films that she did with him. I think they might even have been married. I don't remember. But yeah, and you know, she's fabulous. And I really liked, you know, I really liked her character. I liked the witch. I thought that she was kind of fun. I didn't quite understand why she cursed Sophie to begin with.
I actually wrote down. So let me get this right. She's saved from being assaulted, and her punishment, I guess, is being turned into an old woman.
Yeah, right. Because she interacted with Howl.
Yeah, he interacted with her.
Yeah.
And just because she's in the vicinity and a woman, I guess, she gets cursed.
Well,
I mean, it was a way, because she was the witch of the wasteland was jealous, but also I think just wanting his attention.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not like anybody, nobody ever told him who she was, really.
Yeah. And she had henchmen, but what for?
Yeah, she had henchmen. And then sometimes the henchmen were still chasing them.
Yeah.
Even though she was now with them.
Yeah.
It was a...
It's weird.
There's some moments that it's like, I'm sorry, can you...
No. Speaking of Sophie, young Sophie is played by Emily Mortimer, who I know from a lot of things. I think the first thing I ever really saw her in was the Kenneth Branagh musical version of Love's Labour's Lost, which will remain one of my favorite musicals of all time that nobody has ever seen. Jesse, shout out. You get it. You made me watch it because of your weird Kenneth Branagh phase that I supported wholeheartedly. And she's a great British character actress. She plays a lot of moms. But Caveman, which you would know her most for, and I think my favorite thing that she's ever done, was she plays on 30 Rock, she plays Phoebe. I have hollow bones.
Avian bone syndrome.
Oh, my hand. I will often say in my life, I have hollow bones when I don't want to do something. I'll be like, oh, God, I don't want to do that. I have hollow bones. She is really funny as an actress. She's got great comedic timing. And she plays one of Jack Donaghy's weird girlfriends. And she'll always be one of my favorite of his weird girlfriends. I have hollow bones. And she's always introducing herself to, hello,
no matter
I'm
how
Phoebe.
Many times they've met.
Yeah, I know, we've met. Oh, so great.
We have.
And she's got a really lovely voice, and we will see her again in Shutter Island here in a couple of weeks. But yeah, she's all along been married to Alessandro Nivola, who she met on Love's Labour's Lost, and that guy is super hot. And I love her.
And of course, you were absolutely correct. Humphrey Bogart and Lauren Bacall were married from 1945 until he died in 1957.
See, fucking...
The things in your head.
Yeah.
I mean...
I have an endless capacity for useless information, which is a quote from somewhere, too, that I stole, by the way. So...
And that is in your head, too.
And that's in my head, too. Yeah. Creating a paradox, because how is it endless if I don't say that it's endless? But I first found the quote being... And then.
Wow. Where's the beginning? Where does it end? Josh Hutcherson plays Markle.
Baby Josh Hutcherson, who's probably as tall as he is now.
The boy with the ability to grow beard real fast, I guess. I don't know what he's up to now, but of course he was PETA in the Hunger Games movies.
He was just in the Five Nights at Freddy's movie.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Yep, I remember watching that with my kids once, so...
Yeah, but they were fucking all over
it. Oh, yeah, they loved it. He was in The Beekeeper, and I never finished that movie.
Oh, yeah, he was like the douchey, like, son of the president or something in The Beekeeper. Oh, he was pretty awful. They really tried to make him a thing.
They did.
Hollywood, there was a while there where Hollywood was like, oh, you know, this new YA romance is coming out, and we're going to turn these actors into the next big thing. And most of them... either fizzled because they just didn't have it, or went the Robert Pattinson route where they hated it so much that they went off and did other weird shit. Like, they wanted, you know, I think that Robert Pattinson really hated his time on Twilight, and he didn't want to be defined by that. So he went off and made a career for himself that is incredible now. Whereas some of these other people are just like, oh yeah, he's the guy from Twilight, or he's the guy from Hunger Games,
right.
And unfortunately I think both actors from Hunger Games, both of the love interests, have they haven't gone as far as Hollywood had hoped that they would.
The lesser Hemsworth.
And not to say that Josh Hutcherson is a bad actor, it's just that, like, actor. He's no George Clooney.
We're not into him the way that another actor
There's
more young talent out there than him.
And they tried and it didn't work. Looking over his list of films, I kind of can't see any that I would actively want to watch. And I know that he's been doing stuff forever because, like, he was in The Bridge to Terabithia.
Yeah.
Looking over at his movies, if I had to pick one to watch, like, somebody was like, you must watch one of these films, I'd probably watch maybe The Disaster Artist. Or, no, probably not even that. I would just watch the first Hunger Games movie because that was a good movie.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
Next, we've got Billy Crystal playing Kelsifer.
Yeah, his only other animated role other than Monsters,
Other than Monsters, Inc.
Yeah. We did just blow Billy Crystal not too long ago.
We did. We gave him a good long blowjob last time. And I think I came to the conclusion that City Slickers was my favorite. And I don't remember if you know what your favorite.
Oh, mine was Princess Bride.
Princess Bride, that's right. So, if you want to listen to us talk more about Billy Crystal, just listen to Monsters, Inc.
He does a great job here. I actually really liked that his voice wasn't as Billy Crystal as Mike Sullivan.
Sure.
It was a little less sticky.
There was a little bit of that New York.
Like, you could tell that it was him, but I feel like Mike Wazowski is almost like an impersonation of himself. It's a little, it's up to 11.
Well,
it's
Billy Crystal up to 11. The microphone, end is him telling jokes on stage. Of course, it's...
Whereas this is sort of like at a 5. And I liked Calcifer. I liked that all of these characters in this film were sort of... Not all of them are bad, and not all of them are good, but the bad guys weren't always bad, and the good guys weren't always good. And, like, it showed the duality of a lot of souls, I guess you could say, because Calcifer himself is a demon and not a human. But you even see the duality of his soul in this movie. And, he's cute. He's a cute little flame boy. Now I understand why I see him fucking everywhere. On purses and t-shirts and Funkos and all of them. It's fucking everywhere.
I wrote, who does this charming motherfucker think he is?
When Howl rolled in.
Yeah.
And I immediately was like, and our firstborn was like, Mom gets it. And the boys were confused. They were like, what do you mean? But when that twink shows up on fucking camera, just swooping in and being like, all protective and kind and calling her darling or dear or whatever. Fucking God damn it. Just take my panties. It was so hot the way he just rolled in and took control of the situation and saved her and was actually a nice guy and not a giant red flag like the two soldiers who were harassing her for no reason.
Oh yeah, I think that was more than just red flags going off.
Yeah, well, yeah.
They were straight up ready to assault her.
Yes, they were. Or at least just mess with her in some way. I would like to think that Miyazaki isn't like, this character is about to get raped. But, nonetheless, Hal rolls in and just fucking... Didn't buy the blonde hair. I definitely prefer him with his dark hair.
Looks better with dark hair.
I like that even he was like, I'm not going to be a ginger. Fucking Howl, like, just sweeping a girl literally right off her feet. Literally. Yes, please, and thank you.
Another great animation moment is the reveal of the castle.
Yeah.
Especially when it's...
Took my breath away.
Especially when the camera is low to the ground and it's looking up at the castle, go past it. And you get a really good up-close look at all of the moving parts.
The way that this house is, like, part machine, part alive. I loved its weird little face. It was very Terry Gilliam-esque. Terry Gilliam being the main... He was the American on Monty Python, and he was the one that did all the weird fucking animations. And that, to me, like, the Howl's Moving Castle, to me, very much looks like a Terry Gilliam animation.
Right.
Yeah.
It also reminds me of... No Face from
No Face
from Ghostface Killer. Spirit Away. Yeah. You're Ghostface Killer.
Ghostface Killer.
How it comes? It starts off with all this junk and everything on it, and by the end of it, it's just this kind of naked thing, just kind of scurrying with
these weird little Babadook legs and fucking. It's just it so pretty.
The whole thing is just breathtakingly absolutely beautiful. So. This is also possibly the first time I think a Hayao Miyazaki film has shown butt crack and some man ass. Did you not catch
when Howl was bathing? I mean, I don't know. Usually when I see just like animated ass, I don't pay much attention to it.
It's just the
only animated ass that I pay the most attention to is mine on Disney Dreamlight Valley, because that thing is a fucking...
Yeah, this was butt crack and bear ass later. No. I think he lost his towel. Is that what happened? And then she was carrying him as he's melting in her arms. And mm-hmm. she's trying to keep her eyes up and focused in front of her.
Oh, yeah. And, like, she glances down at one point. Or, yeah. No, that was very cute. Turnip Head. Can we talk about Turnip Head? Turnip Head is so pure. And in a world where Miyazaki characters, especially Miyazaki side characters, are constantly, like, put on t-shirts and put on bags and turned into pop culture merchandise, where's my fucking Turnip Head merchandise? He was the cutest character in that whole fucking movie. First of all, he was good and pure.
Yes.
Secondly, he was a prince in disguise. Mm-hmm. Ugh. You know, and thirdly, he was just so fucking cute. And I would totally, if of all of the adorable things that I've seen in his films over the years and all the cute-ass characters, I would actually purchase a shirt with Turnip Head on it and wear it, because he is sweet baby.
Yeah. Yeah, sweet, I don't know baby. Why Turnip Head didn't get his merch deal.
Yeah, right? Like, it's all Calcifer. It's all the little dust mites. It's all fucking Ghostface Killa. Where's my little man?
I know you and I sometimes go to a place called the Lunchbox.
Yeah.
Which has a lot of Miyazaki.
In most malls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have a lot of Miyazaki merch, but I've never seen Turnip Head.
Yeah. And even, like, pulling up Turnip Head merch on Google isn't giving me a whole lot. It's all Calcifer. Who, yeah, like, he's cute. You know, Turnip Head for the win, man.
Yeah.
I also liked how when he became human, he was like, oh, I'm supposed to be brought back to life by my true love's kiss. And then he and Calcifer look at Sophie and Howl, and they're both like, oh, maybe not. I don't think she's really into you, babe. But still, I think the Turnip Head was sweet, baby. That dog with the human face is the creepiest goddamn thing. And I like
and
how
he flies because he flaps his ears.
Yeah, and you're supposed to believe that that's Howl, but it turns out, no, he's just a fucked up little dog. He is just a straight fucked up little dog with his own little Babadook legs.
Yep.
Like,
just a dog that wanted to...
What kind of breed is that?
It's a Miyazaki breed.
You know, the problem with my loving Turnip Head caveman is that I always fall in love with the weird side characters that aren't out there getting the merchandise. Up until a point, it was really hard to find Bucky Barnes merchandise.
Mm.
You know, there wasn't a
lot
of...
The side characters that the company, the distributors or whoever, the movie makers, when it's time to make merch, they're like... This isn't a character that anybody's going to like.
Like, at the beginning, all the Lord of the Rings shit was all the hobbits and Gandalf, but I'm over here like, I would like a shirt with Aragorn and Legolas on it, please. And it took a while for me to find them, but eventually I found one.
Where's my Figwit merch?
Where's my Figwit merch?
Yeah. And the only way you can get this merch is from...
Like, places like Redbubble or Etsy, where...
Yeah, where other fans are making it because they're a fan of the side characters. Yes.
And it's hard. Like, I found a Bucky Barnes sweater. It is legitimately, like, you know, he's got the one silver arm, although it's like light silver when he has his vibranium arm, so it should be anyways.
Nerd.
Yeah. So he's got the metal arm on the left side. The left sleeve is like metal tinted. And then it's like his cross jacket, and it zips at a weird angle. And I love that goddamn hoodie. I found it at the Disney outlets, no less, for like $20, because nobody was gonna buy it but me. So my whole point is that, like, I always fall in love with the characters that don't get the merchandise, and so I have to pay more because of it, and I'm willing to do it. So if I found the right Turnip Head t-shirt or like pin or button or something, I would totally get it for myself.
Well, because we watched this movie with our children, both of them asked if they could be on the podcast for this episode so they could talk about, you know, what they liked about it and other questions that we asked them. So we're going to hand it over to the conversation that I have with them about Howl's Moving Castle. So now I'm going to talk to my dear kids who were with Maggie and I last night on the couch as we were watching Howl's Moving Castle, Mom's first time watching it. Alex and Jack are here. Alex, how many times do you think you've seen Howl's Moving Castle? Oh, yeah, it's Friday. I'm sorry. You speak French now. You've seen it twice before last night? Or last night was the second time?
Second time.
Wow, I'm actually a little surprised. Wait, how many times have you seen Spirited Away?
Once, with you.
How many times have you watched Princess Mononoke?
I think 3 or 4 times.
Okay, well, now I know which one you really like. You're like me, because I, too, think Spirited Away is the best one, still. Even though the other ones are a lot of fun. And Jack, how many times do you think you've seen Howl's Moving Castle?
I've seen it twice.
Twice now. Is there another movie like this from Miyazaki or the Studio Ghibli movies that you like as well? And how many times have you seen them?
Well, I think I've seen Spirited Away twice.
Okay.
And I think Howl's Moving Castle. Oh, also Princess Mononoke.
Yeah.
Once.
Once. That's great. And which one's your favorite?
Out of all of them, probably Howl's Moving Castle.
It's a fantastic movie. Alex, who would you say is your favorite character from the movie?
Either Howl or Calcifer.
Calcifer, sure.
Me, personally, I like Calcifer the most.
You like Calcifer the most?
Yeah.
Calcifer's a lot of fun. Really funny, silly flame. Alex, what would you say is your favorite part of the movie?
When Howl takes Sophie to the flower field. It's a very beautiful scene.
It is a very beautiful scene. Those flowers are very pretty. That whole countryside is breathtaking, and he was very kind to, almost like the Beast, introducing her, Belle, yes, to the library.
I was gonna say that movie makes me remember Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Especially when I think when Sophie's having a dream, and when she goes upstairs to see those, like, tunnels.
Yeah.
When she was younger, while Howl was the Beast, and that just reminded me of Beauty and the Beast.
All right. Jack, do you have a favorite part of the movie?
I liked the pretty parts a lot, where, like, there's those shots of just really beautiful scenes.
Yeah.
Those landscape.
Like landscape shots, all the establishing shots where they show you where they are, what the world around them looks like.
Yeah.
Yeah, every scene is just a painting, and we sit there on the couch just almost like we're going through a museum looking at all these different paintings on the wall. They're just flashing past us really fast.
Yeah.
To make everything animated.
And
it looks, it is, of all his movies are works of art. And each one of them, each one of them takes my breath away in a different way. What do you get from this movie? What do you think the message of it is? Or what does the movie make you feel when you watch it? Is there anything that stands out to you? Like a moment or something that's said? Something that the creator maybe wanted the audience to know?
The one thing that I took notice while watching the movie is when sometimes you see Sophie, like, a little bit more younger. Like, at first, she was, like, hunchback, like, a little old lady.
Right.
But, like, throughout the movie, she was, like, standing up tall. And, it's because, at first, she was, like, a little, kind of, like, a timid girl, just, like, keeps her to herself, like, an introvert like me. And she kind of like stand up for herself to the witch, but not that much. And like throughout the movie, you see her like gaining her confidence up.
Yeah.
And her, like, getting more younger. That's how much her confidence is, like, building up, is her getting more younger. And, like, when, during the flower field scene, when she's like, I know I'm not that pretty enough, you can, like, see her, like, getting more older, because her confidence was falling down. And at, like, the end of the movie, she is, like, younger, like, what she, like, she is at the start, but, mm-hmm. like, with a silver hair.
Right.
So that curse just, like, makes, made her to, like, gain more confidence about herself, and have her to stand up for herself.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Stand up for yourself. Be confident. Jack, same question. Is there anything that stood out to you that might be a message that the movie was speaking to you with, something that you took away from it, being like, huh, that was that story, like, specifically with the story, and was there anything that you attached to while you were watching it?
I'm not sure. I don't really look that deep into movies. I usually just try to enjoy them instead of trying to find the main idea, you know?
Yeah, that's okay. But you still can appreciate the adventure. And
yeah, I can still appreciate how beautiful the movie is.
Yeah.
And
Jack, when it comes to this movie, is there anything that the people listening that you really wanted them to know about the way this movie makes you feel, or why you think they should watch it?
I think the reason why they should watch it is because, like I said, it's a really beautiful movie. The story is great. And actually, something that I did kind of saw was greed. And what I mean by that is, remember at the end of the movie when the Witch of the West figured out where Hal's heart is at?
Yeah.
And she takes it, and it basically takes apart the crab.
Oh, castle. Yeah, the castle.
The broken down castle, because that's all Calcifer could get from it.
Sure.
And when she grabbed it, the entire thing
just fell to pieces.
Fell to pieces, and that's how they both got splitted up. And even at the end of the movie, the Witch of the West was still holding on to it and saying, no, this is my heart, you can't have it.
That's great. I love that. Alex, was there anything that you would tell people about this movie, if they've never seen it before, why they should watch it?
It is a very fantastic movie. If you like romance, but not like that much, like on screen, like it doesn't really take that much up of screen time.
Sure.
As like other romance movies, if you want like a strong, powerful female lead, also if you want to have a hot guy to drool over, then yeah.
All right. And I would also like to say that I swear, Sophie kissed like 15 different people.
What? Not 15.
Well, I'm over it. Like,
the power he didn't of true love kiss, Jack.
So he kisses like two people, Jack.
First of all, it was Scarecrow, Hal, Witch of the West.
Jack, I think the kiss on the Witch of the West was more of like a grandmother.
Yeah, like I family get that, kiss is not.
It's not like true love, but like what I mean by that, she kissed like 13 different people that is not even related.
Jack, we don't slut shame in this house.
Jesus. All right.
Jesus. sometimes I just feel like I want to transmigrate into that movie and just live in there.
It's one of those places, kind of like Hobbiton and Lord of the Rings, where it's like, can I live right there? Just that little patch of land right there, and I can happily just... We're living the Howl's Castle is kind of cool, too. I like how it can take up a space in multiple different areas at the same time.
I think it was, like, during the flower field scene, I keep on bringing it up, but it's too beautiful. I was just like, I want to place a little cottage right there, and then just spend it there my whole life and die in that house.
Wow. You are a witch.
You're telling me.
Wow.
He looks like she's going to sock me in the face.
You might get it later. So, Alex.
Yes. I don't like this.
What would you rate Howl's Moving Castle out of 5 stars?
Infinite.
Wow.
Damn.
Wow.
So five,
because... Come on, math. But Princess Mononoke, you like more than this?
Yes.
I don't blame you.
I mean, you took me to see Princess Mononoke in the theaters.
I did.
Which...
I'm guilty.
And, like, at first when you said, do you want to watch this, like, anime movie about a girl, like, a wilderness girl fighting off humanity... like with the machines that they have to protect the forest. I was like thinking a very different movie.
I bet you were.
I was thinking like a spiritual girl like coming alive to like fight off a humanity's machines.
Yeah.
Instead of our main character, our main male lead, yeah, leaving his village and then finding Princess Mononoke, and I mean, they are still fighting humanity and their man-made machines, like the guns and like stuff.
Yeah, and then he meets San, who is believed to be the reincarnated spirit of Princess Mononoke.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's a beautiful movie, and I'm so glad that you came and saw that with me in the theater. And then I'm so glad, and I'm sure you're glad you saw it, because then it spiraled into watching more movies by Miyazaki.
Mm-hmm.
And we still have more, because there's...
Ponyo!
We've talked about how many there are and how many that I can't wait to watch with you and Mom both, especially Castle in the Sky. Jack... What would you give Howl's Moving Castle out of 5 stars?
5.
All right.
Like I said, the movie is beautiful.
Yeah.
And, like, those scenes of it just eye-breaking. Like, when I looked over at Mom sometimes when we were watching the movie, I just saw her jaw dropped because... Probably because of the scenery.
Probably because of the scenery. Or Howl.
Yeah.
One or the other.
But the story is great. And it's just a great movie in general. And honestly, it's probably one of the best movies I've seen. Except for, like, all of the Godzilla movies.
Damn right. Well, I'm so happy that you guys got to come on and talk about a movie that you like. I know that there aren't a lot of movies on this list that we're doing that you even care to watch, let alone can't because you're too young. But I'm glad that there are movies on this list like Howl's Moving Castle and Spirited Away and Tron when we did our bonus episode. And Jack does have a bonus episode that we're going to be doing in the future, probably for his birthday. Well, that'd be a lot of fun to do.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All right. Well, thank you for spending this time with me, guys.
Yeah.
Bye.
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 So, Maggie, what would you give Howl's Moving Castle?
I would give Howl's Moving Castle a 4. I don't remember what I gave Spirited Away, and I liked it more than Spirited Away. I would give Howl's Moving Castle...
Even if you liked it more, they could be... You know you gave Spirited Away at least a 4.
At least.
So they can be both 4 movies, and you still like one more than the other.
I would give it a 4. It's... Honestly, no, fuck it. 4.5. It's so fucking beautiful. Just that gorgeous alpine acrylic scenery in the background is enough to give it an extra 0.5 star. Because I just... I mean... Our big fucking TV is so pretty, and it's ridiculous, and sometimes it's too big, and, like, when I'm trying to watch an old TV show or something from years back on YouTube, the graininess is kind of hard to bear, and it's a bit of a burden, but when you watch something gorgeous on that fucking TV, it's life-altering. We watched Beauty and the Beast, the animated Beauty and the Beast, not too long ago, in 4K, and that was the most beautiful thing. Those backgrounds, and I've seen that movie 1,000 times, and I've never looked at the backgrounds the way I looked at them when we were watching it the
very
other night.
Like, very,
that TV is a game changer for us when it comes to our entertainment, and it's so stunning. And it, like, Howl's Moving Castle was so beautiful, just top to tail perfect. So I'm gonna give it a 4.5. What about you, my dear?
I too am giving Howl's Moving Castle a 4.5. The art is some of Studio Ghibli and Miyazaki's best. You can see how art has progressed, even hand-drawn art, mm-hmm. and the way it's shot and animated, and sometimes you can see it progress through time, especially compared to the stuff that came out in the 90s. And now when you watch Boy and the Heron, it's even
oh, I can't wait.
Prettier.
I'm so excited.
And
like, I hate that I have to wait as long as I do to watch it.
Music and the story and the love story, the message that it wants to get across.
The message, too, of compassion and kindness.
Right.
Sophie is so kind to the Witch of the Wastelands, even though she's cursed by her.
Right. I mean, that's a lot of Miyazaki's stuff is the person kind. That you meet in the beginning and believe to be your enemy. A lot of times in these stories, ends up towards the middle or the end to be a close friend.
Yeah.
Somebody that they would consider a friend.
Or just somebody that they care for.
You know, it just goes to show that you never know who a person is based off of their initial, you know, time you meet them.
And kindness is king.
Right.
Being kind to people costs nothing, and it gives you everything.
Yeah, beautiful film, beautiful story.
Yeah, great.
4.5 stars.
Thanks for sharing it with me. I'm glad it was a family movie night.
So, Maggie.
Yes, caveman.
I have 2 questions for you.
Hit it.
Are you the one out there leading the charge?
I saw you teach. You're really good at it.
Watching you reminded me of something I've been missing.
Oh, that was from he was in a movie about teachers with Maggie Gyllenhaal.
Yes.
Fuck. God, I pulled that out of my ass and that endless capacity.
Do you know who else is in it? Like the other main actress who's also a teacher? Or not a mom? Or they're not teachers, they're moms.
No.
Or at least some of them are teachers, some of them are moms.
Yeah.
I forget exactly because I haven't seen the movie. No. I just watched a trailer and I couldn't find any clips of Oscar Isaac in the movie online. And the only thing I can do is pick from his 2 lines that he has in the trailer. Yeah. But yeah, it's called Won't Back Down.
Yes.
With Maggie Gyllenhaal and Viola Davis.
Oh, yeah.
Holly Hunter.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, 2 moms and 1 teacher look to transform their children's failing inner city school. So, of course, white Maggie Gyllenhaal, of course, is going to save the day.
And fall in love with the gorgeous Latin teacher. Yeah.
He's the only teacher that cares for the kids.
Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
So,
how could he not be? He's perfect.
So, question number 1, would the presence of Oscar Isaac's voice have made Howl's Moving Castle a better film?
I don't think so. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it's necessary, and I will explain in my second question or my second answer.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, second question.
Yeah.
Which character would you have had Oscar Isaac play?
See, like, I wouldn't have wanted him to play anybody but Howl. And Howl as Christian Bale, or Christian Bale as Howl, is already so fucking sexy.
Yeah, and like we're talking about Oscar Isaac.
I know, who is so fucking sexy. But I don't think that it needed, like, you can only make him sexier, which is not a bad thing. It's just an unnecessary thing. That's my point, right? I wouldn't want him to have played Calcifer because I think Billy Crystal killed it. He couldn't have been as young as Josh Hutcherson. The only other male character was either Turnip Head's Two Lines, which conceivably, you know, could have been Oscar, or the king that Sophie meets for like 2 seconds, who's just kind of a pompous douche, like, you know, or just random character in background, which is unnecessary. So if I was going to give him a beefy role, it would have to be Howl. Howl's already sexy enough. We could make him sexier, but we don't need to.
I don't understand you.
What? Don't you understand?
Should we turn this into Christian Bale? These roles.
I'm not saying that Christian Bale is hotter than Oscar Isaac. I'm just saying that Howl is hot enough.
I know, but what I'm saying is, could you imagine just Oscar Isaac playing?
Yes, I can imagine that. I can imagine that by myself for about 5 minutes. Because
that's all it will take?
Yes, Oscar Isaac would be Howl. Absolutely, that would be the character. And I would love to see his portrayal. And I would be just creaming the sheets all over it for it. Yeah, you made that face, but you were asking for it, sir. You got me to this point. I was willing to just leave it, but you kept poking the bear. So, yeah, like, I'm saying that, of course, I would love to see him as Howl, and yes, it would be sexy as fuck. But I don't think you need to replace Oscar Isaac with Christian Bale to make the movie better.
Fair.
Yeah. I'd still hit it, though. And that has been this week's episode of Movie Mingle on Howl's Moving Castle, and we hope that you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed bringing it to you. Next week, we are going to be doing the movie I am the least excited to watch of all of these, which is Hereditary. Like, if there's a chance that I like it, it's a slim one. So, you know, that'll be fun for all of you guys, and definitely not me. So we hope that you check in then and enjoy it. And please join us this Saturday for our special March bonus episode in honor of St. Patrick's Day, everybody's favorite Irish holiday. We are going to be watching the perfect little Irish film, Waking Ned Devine. It's a real charmer, folks, so we hope that you enjoy our episode on that, dropping this Saturday. Until then, you can find us on Instagram, Threads, and Letterboxd at Movie Mingle Pod. You can find us on YouTube at Movie Mingle Podcast, and write us at MovieMinglePod@gmail.com with all your questions, comments, and just, you know, fan fiction about Howl and, you know, Howl and female reader, because I take it. As ever, also, please rate us 5 stars or whatever you feel you deserve on your podcast platform of choice, and spread the word so that more people like Miyazaki, we can grow in our fan base and one day take over the world. Until then, take good care of yourselves, be kind to each other, and have a family movie night. Those are the best memories. Now go mingle. Bye!
Are you an effective team?
We are an effective team.
Let them fight.
How did you just do that?
I'm a really good lawyer.
Here on Caladan, we've ruled by air power and sea power. On Arrakis, we need to cultivate desert power.
Welcome, Mr. Peach. What's that bar? I'm a little confused.
Oh, we wouldn't want that, would we?
I don't want to brag, but I will. I was in the Avengers.
The Avengers?
Yeah.
That's great. Thank you. What is that?
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Toga. Toga. Toga.